And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you for tuning in today to Lifestyle Improvement for part 3 of our interview with Dr. Barry Prezant. Dr. Prezant is recognized as one of the leading scholars in autism spectrum disorders and has more than 40 years' experience as a clinical scholar, a researcher, and a consultant for persons with related disabilities and their families. He is also the author of the book Uniquely Human, a different way of seeing autism that is challenging many to rethink how this condition has been understood.
Having choice in life is another way to stay well-regulated emotionally. When people just impose things on you and say you need to do this and you have no say, you know, either you become depressed, despondent, or you go the other way. You protest. And you fight back and you push back. And unfortunately, we see both patterns in many autistic people. Depression is very, very common, especially on into the teenage years and adult years. And then some kids have such strong wills and spirits is that they fight back. You can't just keep telling me what to do. This stresses me out. This is too difficult for me. I want to have more choice in my life. So as part of our approach in the CERTS model is we try to offer choice whenever feasible and appropriate. And also at the same time, teach that sometimes you don't have a choice.
Correct. Like, for example, if you are in a large institution like school, that's a place where there's a lot of challenge as far as making that happen, correct?
That's correct. As a matter of fact, school can be one of the most challenging arenas because it's so intensely social. And of course, one of the characteristics for many autistic people is social anxiety. As you move on beyond the elementary years, you're changing classes rapidly. Those kinds of transitions are very, very difficult for autistic people. And there are rules that are imposed upon you that you may not agree with or might not understand, but you're asked to accept them anyway. I could go through a list of probably 10 to 15 reasons why school is a hotbed of stress for children on the spectrum.
And I think that would be very obvious for parents that have to deal with the results of it once they come back home after they're in school all day, or teachers that have to deal with it through the day. But I like the fact that you talk about the shared control, because that is one piece that I think could make a difference as far as how a day goes in a school, for example.
In my school consulting, when I see a situation where a student is being quote-unquote non-compliant or not cooperative, not going along with the agenda, what I often find is that student doesn't have a lot of say in their lives. That's one of the strategies that I recommend right up front that is very, very helpful.
Perfect. Thank you. So in your book, you also talk about emotional memory. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes. Emotional memory, something we all know well. When we think about memory, we typically think about factual memory. So I want to make a contrast. You know, so what's the address of that house? And that house is a beautifully painted red house, so they have beautiful antique furniture in the house. So much of life we think of in terms of facts. But what we also do is we put an emotional tag on an experience. So it could be a memory about a person. It could be a memory about a place like that house I just mentioned. It could be a memory about an activity, like playing a sport. So emotional memory is the feeling that we associate with that person, place, or activity. So what is human nature about this? Human nature is all about that we seek out things for which we have positive emotional memories. So people who make us feel good, activities that make us feel competent, environments that we feel comfortable in, we seek out. What's the reverse of that? What we call negative emotional memory. We avoid people who stress us out. We choose not to do activities that we know we're not very good at. So I'm not good at particular sports, for example. I was never good at basketball, even though I grew up in New York City and was in schoolyards where kids were playing basketball all the time. I didn't volunteer to be on a team. You know, I would play something else. And we avoid people who stress us out. There are two factors that are relevant for autistic people. Number one, a strength that's been demonstrated year after year in research is a strength in rote memory. Excellent memories. And as I mentioned earlier, people in general on the spectrum have more stresses in life due to many of the factors that I've discussed. So if you have a very strong memory and you have more stress, there are more things that are going to cause stress. Now, here's the kicker. Here's the point. You don't necessarily have to be experiencing that stress directly. It is just the memory of that stress. So if I say to you, you know, you should go to the dentist. I know you have a cavity, but that should be taken care of. So you should go to the dentist tomorrow. You might start feeling anxious. You might start feeling worried. And it has to do with your memory of having a cavity taken care of in the past. Same thing with people. I always like to give this example. You go to a high school reunion and you see all these faces. You may not remember the names or what classes those people were in, but you will remember typically whether you liked that person or whether you did not like that person. So a lot of what guides us in life has to do with our positive and negative emotional memories. And we go along with the agenda or we refuse to go along with the agenda by avoiding activities, places, or people based upon our emotional memory. We feel that in many cases, autistic people are at the mercy of their emotional memory. We can reason through it. But unfortunately, for many autistic people, they experience that emotion in a very raw way. They don't have the insulation around the wire. And so just seeing a person who has caused a great deal of stress might result in a student bolting out of the room. Let me give you a quick example. A young man I knew had a babysitter named Jennifer, and we discussed this in the book. And we didn't know this at the time, and mom didn't know this, but Jennifer had actually physically abused this child when this child was a baby. 10 years later, the child was getting a new aide to work with him in school, and the aide's name was Jennifer. And so this student was told, oh, you're going to get a new aide, her name is Jennifer. And this student started screaming, no, Jennifer, no, Jennifer, no, Jennifer, because he had remembered what happened with that other Jennifer. So it's a very scary situation. Yeah, so we have to help kids deal with emotional memories and, on the other hand, build positive emotional memories.
And how would you teach positive emotional memories?
Well, one of the things that we want to do very often is use visual supports, because very often a lot of people with autism, not all, but most, learn better through visual means. So we literally could sit down and, through visual means, begin to develop categories of things I love to do or things that are more difficult for me to do. And maybe with things that are more difficult for me to do, what can we do to make it less difficult? How can we support you better? Just helping by modeling that language. So very often a child with autism might have great enthusiasms and love some things, but may not have the words to say that. To be able to say, I'm really excited now because we're going to the zoo and I love animals. The excitement might be observed in their body, maybe jumping up and down and flapping and really smiling. But that's where we have to teach the language and the categories to go along with those positive emotional memories.
Another area that you talked about in your book were social rules. Talk to me a little bit about how that benefits to teach social rules and how would you approach them?
Social rules it's one of the most difficult areas for one simple reason. Social rules change all the time. So it's okay to speak in a loud voice on the playground. It's not okay to speak in a loud voice in the library. And we could talk about social rules of conversation, that you should talk with somebody about what they're interested in, not just what you're interested in, which is a common challenge for more verbal people on the spectrum.
This is your host, Rebecca. And now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuka Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuka practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
So we literally, the best way to teach social rules is to practice in social situations and then have a time to reflect. Sometimes video modeling is used so that with certain people with autism, we could literally watch videotapes of people or of themselves and demonstrate, okay, well, you know, you greeted that person very nicely and you extended your hand and you say, hi, my name is. Whereas some people with autism will just see you, and if they're interested, they may jump into conversation even though they don't know you at all. So social rules are best taught through a lot of social practice in everyday situations. And then many people, as a matter of fact, Temple Grandin, the most famous autistic person in history, has written a book called The Unwritten Rules of Social Relationships. And she talks about how she has learned social rules. She developed her own system for learning how to be socially appropriate in different situations. But this is a major area that falls under social communication in our model that is an essential part of being a desirable person to be with, to be polite, to give people options, to follow up on what they're interested in. But it's also at the heart of the neurologically based disability of autism.
And so important as far as being able for them to, again, communicate what they're feeling and thinking and creating emotions that are more positive towards the people they're relating to.
Absolutely. And to develop that awareness that sometimes I may say something that you may perceive as rude, but I'm just being honest. So a very common thing, you know, that an autistic person might say if they see somebody who's just gotten a haircut, they might say, oh, I see you've gotten a haircut. You know, I liked your hair a lot better the other way. And it's just being honest, and it's an observation. But it might be perceived as rude. But if you know that person, you know, then you would factor in that, okay, well, this is my friend Jamie, who's autistic, and he's more likely to say that. But sometimes the honesty could be with wonderful intentions. It's not with bad intentions. Yet we would take that, and we would think it's a bad intention that this person's insulting me or being rude to me.
You talk about energizing the spirit in your book. What do you mean with that?
Yes, energizing the spirit. Let me just tell you the quick story where that came from, which I share in the book. I gave a presentation in New Zealand a number of years ago, and a Maori elder of the indigenous local people did a religious ceremony before the presentation, which is required by law in New Zealand. And before I got up and spoke, he said, Barry, I hope the message you will convey is that in order to advance the mind, we must first energize the spirit. And so energizing the spirit, and that was a great symbol for me. It was amazing when he said it to me. And energizing the spirit is really helping a person to develop that strong sense of self. Who am I as a person? What do I love? What am I good at? Who am I as a person as I relate and develop caring relationships with other people? The autistic people I've known over the years, despite their challenges, are the ones who are very clear about who they are as people. They're clear about their challenges related to their autism. They're clear about their strengths related to their autism in many cases. They know who they are, which is the opposite of having low self-esteem, which is the opposite of always questioning what you do and not having that self-confidence. So energizing the spirit has to do with helping a person to be confident, to know who they are, know what they love, know what they're good at, maybe know what they're not good at, and therefore try to get better at what you're not good at. But it's that notion of identity, of having an identity of who you are as a person. For many, many years, people thought that was so beyond the reach of autistic people or children with autism. And we're not seeing that. Now we're seeing that with the right support and with helping a person to have a more self-determined life and to have more choice in their life, and in helping a person to become more self-aware of their strengths and their challenges, we can reach that goal of energizing the spirit. You know you're with a person who has an energized spirit when they're wonderful to be with, when you're delighted in some cases, their humility, With their knowledge and that sense of self, that strong sense of I know who I am and I'm relating to you through a grounded person who knows who he or she is.
I really think that is powerful how you keep saying helping a person, because what it's telling me there is the important place that a caregiver, a parent, or just anyone that is being part of your life as far as guiding you, that in this case, that person is an incredibly important part of making that process happen, correct?
Absolutely. And we're talking about relationship here. But not making that person somebody in the image you hope they would be. And I would be remiss without a major emphasis on what's happening in autism and what's been happening recently. There are now very, very important autistic self-advocacy groups, ASAN, the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, founded and headed by Ari Niemann. I mentioned Michael John Carley, who founded GRASP, the Global Regional Asperger's Autism Syndrome Partnership. These are autistic people who are letting the world know, here is how we see the world. Here is how you can help us, but it's not just about helping us. We want to be a major voice in what happens. So the motto of the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, ASAN, is nothing about us without us. But for decades, it's always been professionals and to a lesser extent, parents who have been making all the decisions for autistic people. And that's the revolution that we're going through right now. As a matter of fact, a new friend of mine who has a New York Times bestseller called Neurotribes just wrote a sociocultural history of autism and how through the history of autism, we are now at that point where autistic people are beginning to kind of take the throttle and are guiding the ship themselves. The wonderful thing about it is, in a sense, Steve Silberman's book, Neurotribes, is seen as a companion volume to my book. Like his book gives the historical foundation and to take us where we are now. And my book is more, okay, well, how do we actually do this with people with autism in educational settings and so forth? But there's no doubt about it. As I mentioned very early on, we are at a place where there's not going to be any return to how it used to be. And now we also have to educate the world because in a lot of, especially non-Western countries, there are still situations where parents won't even take their child who has autism out into the street because it's such a stigma on the family. Or it is believed that in some cases that having a child with autism means that you've led a bad life in your previous life and this is a curse on you. So with the great variation in societies and cultures across the world, we've got a lot of work to do, but thank goodness we do have ways to communicate more across cultures right now.
Well, and I'm so glad to be a part of that megaphone because here you are speaking to us right now and your conversation with me is going to be in podcasts on the internet forevermore for people to hear this information and to have a lot of questions answered if they read the book. You talked about, and this is a perfect segue to head that direction, you talked about all those people that have contributed to your knowledge base in the past 40 years. So my question to you, Dr. Prezant, is who are the real experts?
The real experts are autistic people. They are the only ones who can understand the experience of autism, even though I say it's human behavior. And we could maybe get little glimpses, for example, my son who's hypersensitive to smell, okay? We get little glimpses of little pieces of autism, but we don't have the whole experience because our brains are different. And autism is not brain damage. What all research is indicating is that autism is the way the wiring works differently in the brain, which results in a different experience of living and of life. And I think that's very important, which actually validates a lot of what we've been talking about and validates what Steve says in Neurotribes, that we're talking about different brains. We're not talking about, you know, people who by definition are just simply deficient. As a matter of fact, Temple Grandin has said one of her mottos is, we are different, we are not less. And I think that that's extremely important to hold on to and to grasp.
Beautifully said. We have talked about the amazing change that is going on as far as the perspective or the way that autism should be looked at from this point on, based on all the years of experience that people like you, incredible experts, have. Tell me more about your program, how people can get a hold of you. I know you do 700 seminars. That's a lot of seminars. Good for you. I am sure that your goal right now, your mission, is to get this information out in whatever way you can. How can people hear more about you? Talk to us about your website, how they can get a hold of you, and of course, last but not least, how to get your book.
Well, first of all, my website is just my name. It's www.barryprezant.com, and I keep an updated list of upcoming presentations. And one of the things that I've been thrilled about is that people who have read Uniquely Human, and it's only been out less than 3 months, see it as a wonderful topic for a keynote address. So you will see a full listing with links to contact information all around the country. Actually, in a month, I'll be doing a series of workshops in South America as well, which will be terrific. So a lot of information there. There's a lot more information, including some other interviews I've done and print information about our model on my website, and also on the website for our educational model, which is www.certs.com. I have a lot of free downloads of articles we've published over the years on my website, some on certs.com as well. And also, we are working with a company that does webinars. And so on November 17th, we're actually doing a free webinar on the CERTS model. I'm doing it with two of my colleagues, Amy Laurent and Emily Rubin. They could sign up for that for free at Presence Learning, one word, presencelearning.com. I also have done some webinars for them in the past that are archived, that relate to the whole idea of how do we support families, how do we understand so-called problem behaviors. As far as getting the book goes, you can go to my website and click, which will take you to Simon & Schuster, our publisher. If you want to see, oh my goodness, between customer reviews and professional reviews, 60 or 70 of them, you can go to Amazon.com, the page for Uniquely Human, and read what parents, autistic people, as well as professionals are saying about the book.
Let me emphasize that the webinars is something that they can come and look at any point because they are archived, correct? Which is great because if this program is in podcast, it may not be November the 17th, but they can still come in there and listen to the information.
Exactly. The premiere will be November 17th and then it will be archived. But I've also done three others for them on topics very much related to Uniquely Human and the CERTS model.
That's great. I would like to hear, as we end this wonderful conversation, ask you, for the caregivers, the listeners, if you had to put your experience, this is a tough question, by the way, it should give you a heads up. If you had to put your experience in a couple of words, in just one gem that you can give a parent or a caregiver or a person that has this condition, if you had to give them one gem that will help them live a better lifestyle, what would that be? What can they take with them today, besides the fact that they can, of course, get a lot of information by purchasing your book? What can they take from this conversation that can be something that can potentially make a difference for them?
I think the most important message I can give, and this really does go back to my 40 plus years experience, is the potential for growth, the potential for progress, the potential for making and supporting a better quality of life is lifelong, lifespan. Where I see people becoming very challenged emotionally is when they get stuck, when parents get stuck and they worry about where their child will be 10 years from now, 15 years now. Even for a student or a child or a person who happens to have a diagnosis of autism and they feel stuck, that school is so challenging for me, it's so difficult. The change that I've seen has just so buoyed and enhanced my faith in humankind that we are all works in progress and that we can all grow and change, sometimes by ourselves, but most often with the support of a caring community. So accepting that support, reaching out for that support, and realizing no matter how stuck we feel at any point in time, we can get past that and we can continue to grow and change and improve our quality of life and our joy in life.
Thank you so much for those words. Those are powerful. Those are definitely life-changing words because they do make a difference in the way we look at things. Suddenly, everything that happens can have a purpose and a meaning that can propel us, correct?
Absolutely. No doubt about that, yes.
Thank you, Dr. Prezant, again, for coming to join us today at Lifestyle Improvement. And I always reach out and extend an invitation for you to come back at any time to speak to us again about any of your publications or to use us as a way to communicate more of this message of change that you are trying to relay to the world.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you for tuning in today to Lifestyle Improvement for part 3 of our interview with Dr. Barry Prezant. Dr. Prezant is recognized as one of the leading scholars in autism spectrum disorders and has more than 40 years experience as a clinical scholar, a researcher, and a consultant for persons with related disabilities and their families. He is also the author of the book Uniquely Human, a different way of seeing autism that is challenging many to rethink how this condition has been understood. Thank you for tuning in to Lifestyle Improvement, and don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for more tips on lifestyle improvement.